Welcome back to the Reanimators with your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hello.
How's it going, Mike? Today we're doing the film Falling Down, which was a 1993 movie with a runtime of 112 minutes, directed by Joel Schumacher, starring Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas, that's appropriate, you know? I'm Michael, you're Douglas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then
perpetually old Michael Douglas.
Perpetually old.
He
seems
old
cranky.
Every movie he's in. Yeah,
a little bit, but I like him anyway.
Hey, you really like him.
I like the movies that he's in. Yeah, I really like the movies that he chooses for sure. And then it's also starring Robert Duvall, who's also a great actor. Barbara Hershey, Rachel Ticotin. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but.
What do you think? You mean you think I want to hurt your family? I have a family of my own. You don't believe me?
We believe you.
This is where I'm going. I'm going home to see my family. It's my little girl's birthday today. We're gonna have a barbecue like you guys. She was gonna play outside, and my wife hold my hand, talk about grown-up things. Then when it got dark, we'd all go to sleep together.
So starting off, we're on the freeway in L.A.
And traffic jam.
Yeah, traffic jam.
It's hot.
It's very hot. You can tell. Yeah. It's like a orange tint to the film.
Yeah, and the camera like comes out of his mouth almost. You know,
yeah,
like
scene, that is true.
It's like right at his lips. Yeah. Just sort of like coming out of his
fly.
Mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a fly buzzing around.
It's kind of all the shitty stuff that you think of when you're in traffic, and his AC stops working, and he's just like, there's a bug crawling on him, and there's people all around him. It's just kind of the horror of modern day life, kind of all at once.
Right. William Foster, right? That's his name.
Well, yeah,
Michael
William Foster.
That's character.
The
okay.
Yeah, or Defense, as he is in the credits.
That's right, and yeah, it's just
that's his license
plate. Is Defense, right? Yeah,
and the whole opening scene was kind of an homage to. The opening scene of 8 and a half. I don't know if you caught that.
Okay. Tell me about
that. You should check out the intro to 8 and a half.
Okay.
Like, if you watch that and watch Falling Down, you'd be like, oh, okay. This is definitely
The Fellini one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Why? What happens in the 8 and a half?
In 8 and a half, it's basically he's caught in a traffic jam and there's a whole bunch of people and there's like, you don't really know what's going on. It feels way more dreamlike in 8 and a half. And then all of a sudden he's like whisked out of his car and he like goes up into the clouds and then the movie kind of starts.
Huh. Okay.
But it is a really cool opening scene. Actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what it kind of reminded me of too. The, Falling Down opening scene.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Right. And so they're sitting in traffic and there's, it's like a delay, right? The construction delay.
Yeah, there's construction.
Yeah, exactly what you said. It's like, you know, traffic nightmare.
Yeah.
Also, did you notice the sound starts very low in the, like, when it first comes across his face, there's very little sound. But then kind of like as the irritation builds and as the scene takes in more of the characters and the different cars and stuff, like it gets louder and louder and louder. It's kind of just like
the
irritation gets higher.
That is cool though. I like little touches like that.
Yeah. And that kind of happens when you get annoyed, right? You just, things get louder and you just start noticing the annoying sounds more.
Right.
And then it's just, yeah.
Yeah. And he sees, like kids, just being kids, really.
Big bus of screaming kids.
Right. And then there's like two guys talking like obnoxiously and
right In the car, yeah.
In
yeah.
the car next
yeah,
to
yeah. yeah. Yeah, yeah. Did you notice there's an American flag on the bus of the kids?
Yeah, it's kind of like yeah. And then some of the bumper stickers are kind of fun too. And it kind of goes back and forth to them a couple times. One of them says like Jesus, or I don't think it says Jesus, but it says He died for our sins.
Yeah, no, it says Jesus died for your sins. Oh, does, yeah, yeah, yeah. And the other one says financial freedom.
Yeah, yeah. And then, but it kind of, I don't know if you notice it, like it, as it cuts back and forth between those. It cuts out the Jesus. It just says He died at a certain point. And then it also says just gets to the freedom part of the financial freedom.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Which I thought was interesting. Like as the fever pitch kind of just rises.
Yeah. 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 Okay. So we got a lot of like, I don't know, American themes and like references to the U.S. so far.
Definitely.
And some of the, you know, potential problems and issues in the U.S. Okay, and then this is the early 90s, and it's something
It is very much a film of its time.
Yeah. It is.
It does feel like the 90s in the movie.
Yeah.
Although Michael Douglas's character seems like he's more like 50s or 60s.
Right, right.
Because
right,
he's like...
Wearing, baby boomer.
Yeah, yeah. yeah he's got the like kind of crew cut. And
yeah, yeah. He, yeah. You know, he was he grew up after the war and
yeah, he looks
promised
like
a lot. And
he's out of time, even for the 90s, he looks like...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There. Yeah. Well, his outfit, you know, with the tie and the white shirt, it's kind of become a little bit, you know, in underground circles like that. I think in a couple of rap songs, they mention like, you know,
His
Kanye West. Yeah.
And has like, a song where he's like, falling down like Michael Douglas.
Yeah. Yeah. And the character with the buzz cut and the, and the white shirt and tie kind of has come to represent character like Michael, like Foster,
right?
As well as you know, explore.
There's also in The Simpsons they have a character or like an episode where there's a guy that is obviously kind of molded on defense.
Oh yeah, right. But, yeah. I think I read that too. Okay, so and then he just can't take it anymore, right? Gets out of the car, which I love. I think it's a great intro.
I don't know if you noticed, what really, like, set him off, like, it's just, like, getting more and more fever pitch.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a little girl holding a doll.
Oh, yeah.
In the car ahead of him, kind of looking at him, and she kind of, like, seems sad. And that's when he just, like, gets out of the car and...
That's it. That was the final straw.
Yeah.
Holding a doll.
Because remember, it's his daughter's birthday. Oh, we don't know this yet, but like it's his daughter's birthday. This is kind of what sets
connection.
Him all in motion.
That's right. So he's got his daughter and his estranged daughter and wife.
And so he does what most of us would like to do sometimes when you're in traffic, and he just gets out of his car.
Get out of the car.
Walks. Yeah.
Yeah.
People in back are like, "Hey, what are you doing, buddy?"
Yeah. Some guy yells at him.
Yeah.
And yeah, he just gets out, you know, he leaves the jam. He leaves the rat race kind of like
and he's on a mission. He, and we don't know what yet, but he just seems like he's on a mission.
Yeah. It, you could read it as somewhat metaphoric, right? Cause like he, you know, after this, he does some kind of crazy things and stuff. And it's like, you know, we're all in this sort of rat race of life. And most people stay in it, even though there's like all these irritations and shitty aspects to it. But if you get out of it, it throws people off, right?
Yeah.
If you take a weird route, like if it's a bad route or a crazy route or something like that, like people are like, wait, what are you doing? How could you get out?
Just,
like,
get off,
you can't
out of your
just
car.
Get out of here. And then there are consequences to like taking these weirder routes,
right?
As we'll see. But
yeah, it is kind of like the heat, it seems, that really sets him off. Kind of like, do the right thing. It kind of got that flavor too, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he ends up walking towards a Korean grocery store just so that he can get change to make a call. And then he goes in and asks just for change. And the guy says, no, you have to buy something.
Right.
And then tries to buy a Coke and... If he wouldn't get enough change back to make the call, and he gets pissed off at the Korean grocer, and it ends up being kind of a little bit of a skiff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so they get into this conflict, and there's some... He, Foster, mocks the Korean grocer for, like, his English pronunciation, right?
Right.
So some it's racial dollars. Issues. There's just a lot of racial issues in this movie.
Definitely, yeah. This is where that's why it was, where it first comes out. Button movie.
Yeah.
That might be why it never... You know, it's not a household name movie.
Right. Okay, so we start to see Foster as having some, you know, I guess, I don't know, some of his racial biases or stereotypes coming out. Right. And then they, yeah, then they get into a fight, and he kind of...
He basically is like, we're rolling back prices to 1969. And
right.
Starts... going through the store and just like destroying everything after that scuffle takes this bat.
Right, right. Yeah. So he starts talking about the prices, about right, how everything's so expensive. Right. So this is another sort of illustration of his character, right? He kind of lives in the past or something like that. He lives in a different era, and he wants to take things back to that era. He's sick of modern culture. He's sick of sort of... he's irritated with multiculturalism.
I guess so. But I think... I don't know. That there are sticky situations where it's just like, you know... I think everybody can identify with, you know, just feeling out of place.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's, you know, right down the block.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And everyone can also feel like, you know... resisting change, right? I mean, it's funny. We all hear the old guys like complaining about the new generation or the old, and you know, it seems like no matter how much the younger generation sort of like tells the older generation that that's just how it is, when the newer generation gets old, they have the similar complaints. It seems to be part of the human condition.
It does, yeah.
But yeah, so we start to see this picture of him more emerge, right? He's almost like he misses the 50s or something like that.
60s, 50s. He said rolling back prices.
Yeah, but not necessarily like the counterculture 60s, right? Where like the...
No, he seems much more the button down.
The silent majority or something like that. Like the 50s generation.
Yeah, just like, hey, you work hard and stuff and you'll have...
Yeah.
You're guaranteed a good life.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, he kind of, like, messes up this Korean store in his own mind, I think, for, like, a righteous, kind of, like, for the customer, almost, or, you know, you could look at it different ways. Like, there was a ban from the Korean Grocers Association because of that scene in the movie, and I think South Korea banned the movie as well because of that.
They banned the movie. Wow.
Yeah, I think that now you can watch it, but like when it first opened in theaters, they didn't premiere it.
Huh.
But
that is interesting.
I think you know, a lot of people feel like this movie was very much racially.
Actually is supporting right. That okay. Right, so that, like so he, definitely the character in it has got some. Well, there's some racial conflicts, and then the character in it seems to have some like race, some at least somewhat racist
maybe,
attitudes.
But like there are more white people that he gets into fights with than anybody else.
Right. Okay. But so there's a question though: if the character has some racist attitudes, does that necessarily mean the movie is like advocating?
Yeah, that, you know,
I guess
because
like the movie can step
which I don't
back
think
from
that
it.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we can talk about that, I guess, as we go through the scenes.
Yeah.
But there is an interesting thing about this, right? Like, you know, this guy who seems to be living, who seems to be sort of stuck in the 50s, wanting to go back to the 50s. I mean, he kind of might, you could argue he might, he sort of represents maybe white male culture or white culture, which is potentially being threatened by multiculturalism or something like that.
I guess so. But I think that it's bigger than that. I think that that's just like a part of what he's upset about. I don't think it's...
Right.
I don't think that's the main...
No. I don't think it's the main either. Character. Yeah. I think it's like a theme that,
yeah, that
you could potentially
is.
Read into it because...
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah. Because, right, the early 90s, you also had the race riots.
Production of the
That's
movie
right.
was shut down for a little bit because it was actually during
yeah.
the LA riots for Rodney King.
Yeah.
It wasn't for that. It was for the police officers being let off is what started off the riots.
Right. And of course, we're having similar riots today.
Exactly. So it is kind of a timely movie for then and for now. Yeah. Like we still have the same issues, it seems.
Yeah, that's true. And I haven't heard this sort of movie mentioned recently. I guess that's part of the reason why we're trying to reanimate it.
Huh? Yeah. I mean, it didn't flop. It was a critical success.
Right.
So why don't more people know? I guess that's
critical and financial success. Yeah.
So, but not very many people know about it. I looked in stores, couldn't find it. Even on Amazon, it's hard to find.
Yeah.
No streaming services at the time of this podcast have.
Yeah. We had a hard time. Being able to find it to screen it actually. But yeah, so we also haven't talked about, because it does, it skips back and forth between Foster and the cop character, right?
Right. They're both kind of the same character, if you really think about it. They're guys kind of an older time, and they live by a code that's kind of extinct.
Well, okay.
You know, I mean, like in
yeah, so
Robert
yeah.
Duvall's character, so, kind of, he takes it on the chin and just keeps moving along.
Right. So he does grow a police officer who,
right,
you know, who like kind of puts up a lot of shit in his life, and like he puts up with his boss, and he's the one sort of like gets on Foster's case, like as Foster starts doing these things. Right.
Okay. He puts it all together on his last day.
Right. Okay. So Foster is takes things on the chin. He's, he kind of like does what his boss wants. Right. Yeah. And he kind of does what his wife wants, even though it seems like she's asking unfair things of him, right? Or something like that.
And he's disrespected by his coworkers.
I guess he is, right? Like some of the characters. Kind of, well, that one woman character likes him.
Right. There's the Rachel Ticotin.
Yeah. She's an interesting character.
Yeah. She's the only person, it seems, that kind of respects him or doesn't disrespect him.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But
why do you... I don't see them as being super similar. Why do you think they're similar characters?
Because, as I said, I think that they both kind of live by an older code where they're just like, I'm going to do my job and I'm going to be nice to people. And
so you think Foster was doing his job and was nice to people, and then he just got fed up with it.
Yeah.
And then what's Duvall's character in the movie? Do you remember his name?
Pendergrass.
Pendergrass. Okay. So we have Foster is Michael Douglas. Pendergrass is Robert Duvall. But it seems like,
I think that
puts up with things.
The whole thing of their characters, they're both caught in the same traffic jam. We see.
Right. Robert they Duvall, are. That's true. Yeah.
Right, he's and Robert, in the Robert yeah. and he's having a good time. He looks at a billboard and somebody, there's like a girl with a big old rack, and somebody has put graffiti of like a person in between the cleavage going, help.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And he like laughs. Yeah, yeah. And so he's like,
He's in the jam. He's in the rat race, but he's putting up with it and he's enjoying
and
it.
And he's just finding a way to put a smile about it rather than a frown. Yeah.
Or maybe he's just enjoying it. I don't know. I mean,
he finds ways to get through, I think.
Well, what if it's not necessarily a bad thing? Like, what if Foster views it as a bad thing, but Pendergrass views it as a good thing? Like, who says it's like, who says either one is right? Right. You know, it could just be.
I guess so. But I mean, it is
a traffic jam at the end of the day, which is not great.
Right.
Yeah.
But, so he, after the Korean store, he takes the bat from the guy. And he actually pays for the soda. And,
yeah.
You know, but he pays the price that he thinks is 50 fair.
50 cents, right.
Takes
the bat.
And then he
doesn't actually steal anything, but he does, you know, fuck up the store.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he has the change. He makes a call to his ex-wife's house that we will find soon. And he doesn't talk. She picks up, says, hello. He can't find the words. And so he moves on and he ends up in like a little park.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. Right outside of the downtown.
Wait. Right. Okay.
And
when did she call the police about the phone call? Is this before or after his wife?
Pendergraph's
wife? Yeah, yeah. No, no, no. Foster's wife, remember?
No, she doesn't know anything yet. Like,
okay,
she just made a phone call.
But she does call the police eventually. Okay, we'll get to that,
yeah,
I guess, after.
That's later.
Okay. Yeah. All right, yeah, so he's wandering, so he calls his wife, doesn't get anything. We start to learn more about his character, like he's wanting to reach out to his estranged wife and daughter, and he wasn't able to. He's further frustrated. Okay, and he wanders into this park. Yeah.
He wanders into a park, and his shoes are falling apart, it looks like, which, and it has a really nice shot of the city,
oh, yeah,
LA.
You, yeah,
and
you like that shot.
I love that shot. And then it goes down to his, Michael Douglas's eye through the shoe, and then he like puts it down. I don't know. It's just a really nice shot.
Why?
I don't know. Because it gets the city, it gets him, it like shows you a whole bunch of like the character and the city, which,
okay,
I think is almost a character in this,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, LA, yeah. If,
yeah. And not very many movies, a lot of movies are shot in LA, very few of them
make any character.
Yeah, or just like show it. It's, you know, it's ancillary. They
right,
do other things
right
around, or even it's supposed to be taking place in a completely
right
different city.
Right. No, I agree. And I really love LA movies when they make this,
yeah,
city
when
character.
It's about,
and it's
LA.
Like, yeah, it's,
yeah,
LA is part of it. Yeah.
But
by the way, shout out to one of my favorites, To Live and Die in LA.
Oh,
maybe
yeah
the best titled movie of all time. Anyway, I'll just leave that. I'll just let that, you know, slide that over to you, Doug. Okay.
But so yeah, he's looking at his shoes. His shoes are falling apart. And then he's got two, like, thugs coming up to him.
Okay.
And
two gang members.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they kind of are like, hey, you got to move on. And he's like, oh, okay. I didn't. And he's rude.
He's rude, yeah.
But he also is compliant. And then they keep on saying, hey, you need to pay, like, a tax. I think you should pay a toll. And he kind of gets fed up, and
right,
and they think he's easy prey. They don't know that he has the bat, and he ends up beating them up after
right
they take out a knife.
Right. So they kind of start. Well, he wanders into their gang territory.
Right.
Right,
but
then,
he says, like, I didn't know this was your pissing ground. I'm sorry.
Right. Right. But, right, and then they sort of start, it's kind of funny, it's like the beginning, the first few conflicts, the others start the fights, but then later on he kind of
instigates.
Is more instigator, but,
yeah.
But, okay, yeah, so he doesn't necessarily start it, but he kind of, it's funny, he almost gets lucky in all these conflicts too, you know,
he definitely
just happens
does
to,
yeah,
like, you know.
The fact that the police aren't on him right away.
Get the better of these two gang members. I don't know. I think so. It is interesting, though. I mean, it's like the way if you look from the gang member's perspective, it's funny because it's like a white guy wandering into a space that he just he's not aware of or anything like that. He thinks he can access, or he's privileged to access. But like,
I mean, it looks like a park.
Yeah, it looks like a park. And it is like a public park, right?
Yeah.
But like it's sort of, you know, you could argue it's, I don't know, it's an example of like white privilege or like white ignorance, right? Like wandering into somewhere that has all these like, you know, sociocultural relationships between the people in it, but like him having no idea about it and just sort of like feeling entitled to the space, right?
No, I disagree. But I mean, and like they say like, hey, he's like, I don't see any signs that I can't come here. And they go, what do you call that? And it's graffiti. And he's like, I don't know. Maybe if you wrote it in fucking English, I would understand.
Yeah.
Which is like a valid point. Is like, are you supposed to know the neighborhood's racial dynamics before you walk into a place? I think that you should be able to, you know, I think that those thugs could go into any other park in LA and not be hassled. I don't think that it's a white privilege that he thinks that he can just go to any park he was just sitting there.
Well, yeah, but I mean, so like you could argue that, you know, poor people in LA, they don't have like their own sort of space. They don't have their own land.
I mean, yeah, they do.
No, they don't. They rent or anything. They don't own anything. So you could argue that like a public park is their only space or something like that. And, you know, just the fact that, you know, he, like, Foster wanders into it without understand or acknowledge.
Yeah, but that. Do you have to like look at a map of every place before you go there, or
just if you go to a neighborhood, if you go to Chinatown or something like that, like you know, you could have an expectation that you're going into a different cultural neighborhood and like respect it or something like that.
But what was he doing to disrespect it?
Well, I guess I wasn't necessarily disrespecting it, but he's feeling entitled to it, I guess, in a way that like I don't necessarily do if you, you know, think you're going into like an alternative cultural space or something. But
yeah, but you're just like presupposing that everybody should know where they are. And like to me, it's like, hey, everybody should be free to be wherever, and that's okay. Like as long as you're not on somebody's like backyard, like that's not cool. And he even says. He says like, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't know this is like your place. I wouldn't want you guys in my backyard. So right. I'll move on. And he's completely like, he does it in a mean way kind of, but like he basically is like, hey, sorry, I'll just move on. Sorry. Yeah. I didn't know this is your place.
Right. Yeah. So I agree with that. Like, you know, but yeah, I guess I was just like sort of remarking about his sort of original viewpoint and stance, but yeah. Okay. So he does seem to try to, get on the same page, and then again the conflict, and he gets more weapons out of it, right? Oh no, they gets weapons.
Yeah, he gets
later.
The butterfly knife.
Okay, yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I do like the aspect of like it's like a video game where he starts out with a bat and then he gets a knife.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Like Grand Theft Auto or something
like
that. Yeah,
feel like
you start
like
with
leveling
your,
up, kind of.
Yeah. That is interesting.
It's fun. Yeah.
And also, so you level, you level up, you get better weapons, and you get more experience. I guess maybe he gets more experience, but I don't know if that applies. He gets more wherewithal about further conflicts, but he just seems to get lucky a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually they come back. So he leaves the park after he gets the knife and beats them up, and then they find him again. Right? They like get into a car and they drive around and they see him again at the telephone booth.
Right.
And I guess he's trying to call his wife again.
And this time she hears the dead silence.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Goes,
okay.
Here, I know it's you.
Here we go. Yeah. Come so on, she realizes that his wife realizes that he's calling.
The gang members try to do a drive-by.
they miss and hurt a whole bunch of people standing by.
And then he seems to be like completely
oblivious.
He just like sees everything and he's like, oh, whatever. He keeps walking.
Yeah.
Like nothing happened. But then he sees that it's the guys that he beat up in the park.
Right.
And then he kind of has like a gloating, you know, he goes over
right.
and like,
yeah, yeah.
He grabs their guns. And he
says, you missed.
Yeah, you missed. Yeah, which is pretty fun. And then he gets the gun and shoots him in the shoots at first. And
oh,
he's,
yeah,
he's
he
like,
does
I
shoot
missed
him.
Too.
Yeah.
And he does shoot him in the leg, too.
Yeah. And then, yeah, and then you're right. He upgrades his weapons again.
Yeah,
he gets a whole bag full
an arsenal
of weapons. Yeah. And then, yeah, and then so the girl that's with the gang members, though, she becomes more important later when she goes to the police to talk to them about it.
But
that's like his third conflict, right? I guess the end,
yeah.
the second, but the third conflict.
Yeah.
And
we're also simultaneously with Pendergrass, and he hears something back at the station about somebody.
At the Korean grocer?
Yeah.
Someone.
And he remembers that he was there because he helped push the car out of the way and had defense.
Oh, yeah. He remembers that. He makes a connection to the traffic jam.
Or I guess no, he doesn't make the connection there.
Right. But he is starting to piece together the conflicts, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's a man. There's.
Well, and it's funny because, like, they bring up the Korean grocer to him to take a statement for a robbery, and he says to another policeman, what's he saying, because he's speaking in Korean, and the policeman says, I'm Japanese. And so, like, that's another a whole bunch of multicultural things and just kind of the clash in between.
But didn't you say that actually the actors playing it were not? Well, he wasn't Japanese, he was actually Chinese or something like that?
Well, yeah, so the Korean grocer is actually Japanese, and then the Japanese policeman is actually Chinese, so...
Huh, okay.
Yeah, but he basically comes up there and he's like, oh, he paid for the soda. He paid for the soda, so it's not a robbery.
Right, right. It's not a robbery.
And this is where he starts, like, and that was right by where he pushed off the car, which he'll put together later.
Right. Yeah, so, so we have these parallel plots, right? We have Foster sort of going through Los Angeles and getting into conflicts with people and sort of, you know, he, and then we have Pendergast, who's sort of piecing things together.
And it's his last day on the force.
Oh, that's right. It's his last day on the force. He's about to retire. Kind of a
cliche.
It's always the last day on the force for police officers.
And they kind of do allude to, like, how is he going to die? Like, people might die on their last day.
There's
that whole thing.
Okay. So, and then the next scene is, like, probably, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's my favorite scene. The Whammy Burger scene.
Oh yeah.
I mean, this is a classic scene. This is
there's a few scenes before that, like
he's
walking through the park and there's the homeless guy that's like, hey man, you've got a briefcase and I've got nothing, that's not fair. And I don't think we should skip over that because it's kind of just showing a picture of modern day society, and you know, everybody walks around and then homeless people and they beg, and he's pretty cordial to him at first, and then as it becomes, he's like, hey, I haven't eaten in a week, and he has a sandwich in his hand, and he's like, well, besides this, and you know, he's hostile, the homeless man starts getting hostile, and then eventually Michael Douglas is like, you know what? Just take my briefcase. Here, I don't need it anymore.
Right.
Because he has the gun bag, too. And so the homeless guy's like, hey, you have two bags. I don't have any. That's not fair.
Yeah, so he chooses to give him the briefcase as opposed to... So he kind of, like, decides his identity in that moment, or, like...
Yeah.
Because, like, he gives up the briefcase and keeps the guns.
You're right. He's, starting to morph a little bit. He kind of just, like, changes a little bit more throughout the whole thing.
Okay. Do you think that... So you said that some... countries and some people have felt this movie was potentially racist, or there was like some uncomfortable things occurring. Do you think that like it potentially like had a stereotyped negative view of homeless people or something like that? That it wasn't very, developed or nuanced. It was just like kind of a this dumb homeless guy who's just like saying contradictory things.
He didn't treat him like wrongly until.
No. I'm not necessarily talking about Foster. I'm talking about the film. Like if the film is portraying,
I think the film is trying to portray real life.
Yeah,
and it upsets real life. Upsets people.
Okay,
and they would rather pretend like real life is not what's going on around them, and they would rather, you know, just be told like that everything's nice and everybody gets along, and then when they're confronted with the way things truly are, sometimes it upsets you and you think that you're on the wrong, or that
what do you mean the way things truly are?
That there are homeless people in the world.
Oh,
that
yeah,
there are gang members that happen to be a different race.
Oh yeah,
there
yeah,
are,
yeah.
Like upsetting things that happen at a grocery store with somebody who doesn't speak your language and kind of treats you like trash.
Right, but I mean, there's one level of like, you know, saying that there are homeless people, and another level of like portraying them in like a simple and just negative. Stereotyped way.
Okay, but like also there's the other way where you just portray a homeless person as like poor and it's society's fault and
and
that's so like could, perfectly
so you could like, have so you could have two different perspectives, but I'm just
right,
saying like
people get upset at if you show a homeless person who's not like nice and it's not their fault that they're there. People get upset at that. If you show a homeless person and it's society's fault, then that's like perfectly okay.
Right. Well, it seems like at least nowadays more so like more sort of politically correct culture that we're in, it's a little bit less acceptable to portray them in the way that they're portrayed in this movie, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
The only acceptable way to portray them is a victim of circumstance.
I think maybe that's a little oversimplified, but yeah, there's something Seems something right about that, yeah. Okay.
And I think that that's also, you know, why people got upset is that, you know, if the grocer clerk was Eastern European and he did the same thing, I don't think anybody would be upset. You know, it's...
What do you mean?
If he was an Estonian guy,
yeah,
who couldn't say dollars, and he was like, hey, you come to my country.
Oh, just because there's racial tensions between whites and Asians.
No, just because that it brings to the fore that they are of different races.
Okay. I see. Yeah. And race is such a hot button issue in this country as it always has been. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But yeah.
So should we talk about my favorite scene?
Oh, the fast food?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whammy burger scene?
Yeah.
I mean, this is great, right?
This is a pretty fun scene.
This is like a classic, you know, scene where just not going to put up with this shit anymore.
Exactly. You know? I think he starts out kind of like, you're not sure, because he does questionable things, but there are things that he does that you're like, oh man, I wish I could do that. And that's,
I think everybody
can agree.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Hey man, it's 2 minutes past 11.
Explain what happened?
Yeah. Why don't, you know what, let's just show a clip.
Hi, can I help you?
Yes, I'd like a ham and cheese womblet and wham fries.
I'm sorry, we stopped serving breakfast, but we are on the lunch menu now.
I want breakfast.
Well, you can't have it, we're not serving it.
So you said. Is that the manager?
Yeah.
Could I speak to him, please?
Sure. Rick, there's a customer that would like to speak with you.
Yes, sir.
Hi, I'd like some breakfast.
We stopped serving breakfast.
I know you stopped serving breakfast, Rick. Sheila told me you stopped serving breakfast. Why am I calling you by your first names? I don't even know who you are. I still call my boss Mister. I've worked for him for 7.5 years, but I walk in here all of a sudden, total stranger. I'm calling you Rick and Sheila like we're in some kind of AA meeting. I don't want to be your buddy, Rick. I just want a little breakfast.
Well, you can call me Miss Folsom if you want to.
Sheila, we stop serving breakfast at 11:30.
Okay. Right, so they stopped serving breakfast at 11:30. It's 4 minutes past. He wants breakfast. They refuse to give him breakfast. A lot of us have been in this position where, you know, the sort of smiling manager comes out and says, "I'm sorry, ma'am. You can't.
That's not our policy.
It's not our policy. We can't. You know." And you know, I mean, to their credit, they're just doing their job.
Exactly. It's
like that's what they're supposed to do. Yeah. You know, that's what they're told to do.
There has to be
a
time that they stop doing whatever.
Stop serving breakfast. But yeah, if you've heard of this movie before, then it might be this scene that you've heard of.
I've heard
people talk about this scene.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of reminded me, I don't know if you've ever seen that movie Five Easy Pieces with Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's that famous scene where
we don't serve toast.
Yeah, exactly.
You have sandwiches.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So he doesn't take everything off the sandwich.
Yeah, yeah, and then so he's kind of like, you know, just not going to put up with the shit, like bureaucracy of the restaurant,
right?
And yeah, I don't know. This kind of reminded me of this. Is like that was in the early 70s, late 60s, kind of like representing that sort of counterculture, and this is like, you know, early 90s. I mean, seems to be less, you know, counterculture, I guess, in the early 90s, but there's more anger.
There's
angst. People are angry and they want to do something like this and not put up with it. But
yeah, I mean, I think that it's just, you know, because at a certain point he stands up for the stupidity of the world that we accept. Because also just like when he does, which is kind of funny, he really wants the breakfast, he takes out the guns to get the breakfast, and then he's like, you know what, on second thought,
yeah,
I want the breakfast.
He does. That is weird. I was kind of wondering why
I think it's because he wants the lunch anyway. It's not that he really wants, it's not the breakfast that he wants. He wants people to act in a way that he thinks is like,
okay,
that he thinks is, because he really just wants to be people to be polite.
Okay.
He feels like people aren't being polite.
So that's interesting. So what if we read this as like some kind of representation of the decade that like you want something, you're angry about it, you're willing to do something silly, like, you know, take out a gun or something like that. But then when it comes down to it, you don't really actually want it. You know, it's just
you just
want
the right.
You want the respect, or you want the right to do it when it's just, okay,
But then he does, he gets the burger and he's like, look at this miserable.
It is
look at that picture. That is juicy, which is right. Everybody knows that what you get isn't what is advertised, sort of.
Right.
And so he, at this point, he seems kind of like a consumer right advocate that takes it to an extreme level.
Right.
And he does it in a completely ridiculous, at least at this point in time in the 90s, maybe this was like a ridiculous thing. Nowadays it seems like, oh, you know what? There's shootings.
Oh, there's a lot more shootings.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like
this. Yeah. And it is, this might be prescient of like now, right? Cause to me, a lot of, to me, like a theme throughout this film was just sort of anger and frustration.
Yeah.
It was just
is.
It's something, you know, it's represented in the race riots in the early 90s and just like, and this character is, you know, has a lot of this anger and frustration. And yeah, I mean, like we still have this now. Maybe it's like resulting in more actual killings and stuff like that. But this anger,
right.
Whereas you don't necessarily see. Yeah, I guess in like films about the 60s and 70s, you see people that are angry, but it's more for like a specific cause.
Right.
Whereas like civil rights or something like that.
Right.
But here
and then
just
they won. And
then
now it's like, well, wait, everything's supposed to be better. And it's not.
Right. Okay. So
and it's
still
kind
of,
I think that
anger.
That's what he, what his, what it seems to me at least is, William Foster's character is kind of like, hey, I played the rules of the game.
Yeah.
I did everything right.
Right.
I went to work. I got the wife.
Just
I got
like
the house.
Post-World
I did
War
everything.
II.
Yeah. And he still is screwed.
Yeah.
And he...
Well,
and
he's
he
not screwed. He's
you know,
just
he's
like,
out of a job because...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Cold
he got fired.
War,
well, that's something
the Cold War
say.
Ended in the 90s,
yeah.
too, which is something...
Yeah.
And so he was a defense contractor.
Right.
And he lost his job.
Yeah, that's right.
And
that's something, yeah. We
yeah.
haven't really told to, you know, explain yet. But yeah, he got fired a month ago, right?
Yeah.
A month before.
And he's been... And he had been... Just driving to work every, or
yeah,
driving
I mean,
somewhere,
I mean,
doing
we
something.
Never actually knew what he was doing.
But nobody knew he lost his job.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's upset, and you know the way he acts it out is not a good way.
Yeah.
You know?
So,
and I think like even
so the American dream he was told that he's going to get the American dream
right.
And he just hasn't,
and he feels like he's entitled to it.
Yeah. He feels
mad.
Like right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He's mad and he's not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, it kind of has rings of
network. Yeah. Okay. So
and then he's just walking home at this point. He doesn't have his car anymore. He's just beelining to his home, and he just happens upon a whole bunch of things, which it's kind of like the Odyssey in a sense. You know,
oh.
He's a guy that's been away for a while, and he's coming home. You know, that's
right. He's going back
plot.
To his where his wife and daughter
right.
live.
And he keeps on like encountering. He's not. It doesn't. Except for the fast food thing, a lot of the things just kind of happen to him.
To him.
And he just like he acts in a way that he feels is righteous at least, and it becomes more and more less righteous. And
yeah,
you see that
that's a good way. That's
on.
A good way to say it. Yeah, it becomes like his sympathizing with him becomes harder and harder as it goes on.
You have to question it. Yeah,
yeah.
Which is also. One of the cool things about the movie, I think, is
mm-hmm.
that because it's not so cut and dry. This is the hero. He's a good guy,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, what did you think of Pendergast? Is he the hero?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think
mean,
he
I
is.
Guess he's a good guy.
He's
and
the
we
grinder,
sympathize with him.
And he gets shit on by everybody, and he still makes it through, and he does everything right.
In the end, he's kind of got a weird character change. We'll get to that, I guess, later that I'm unsure about. But yeah, okay, that's fair. And it's kind of, you have these two dudes and then you watch, it's kind of.
They are kind of the same.
Well,
they've got the same
of,
problem.
Well, yeah, you could say like they're the similar and they're same, but then as their paths diverge, one of them becomes the hero and one of them becomes the anti-hero.
Right.
So
and
like
it started kind of inverted where you're kind of like.
Because we started with Foster.
Right.
Yeah, we started with him in the first scene. Yeah.
Right.
And kind of sympathizing with him being frustrated in the traffic jam, etc. But okay. So was the next one when he goes, I think, looking in the for boots in the store? Or?
Well, yeah, but I think that important to point out is he's walking and he sees a black man who's dressed
exactly like him. Yeah,
and he's outside of a bank picketing it by himself. And he's yelling and screaming that he's not economically viable.
Yeah, right.
That the bank wouldn't give him a loan.
Right.
And so I think that this is the point at this point you could just be like, oh, he's a racist. He's all these things.
Oh, okay.
He's
the character. Yeah.
He's
imposter. Yeah.
He's anti homeless people. He's a certain type. But you can tell that this is one of the only characters that he really identifies with.
Yeah, he does.
And he says he gets the cops come and take him away, and he says, "Don't forget me."
Yeah,
and he actually doesn't forget him.
Yeah, yeah.
He uses that "I'm not economically viable" line later.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, you could say that this guy is also played by the rules.
Yeah.
Protesting, and he's trying to get a loan, I guess, and he just like the banks turned him down.
Right.
For whatever bureaucratic or whatever reason, maybe potentially racist reason.
Right.
But yeah, that is interesting that they identify with each other, and he even knows like the
Both connect. They're both dressed in the same.
Yeah, it is
fashion,
funny,
which
is
kind of funny. Like down to the tie is the same.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I think that's you're right. That's one of the most pivotal scenes of the film.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also he tries to call his wife again, and a rude guy is like outside of the booth. And he, hey, get off the phone. It's my turn. And then he gets off the phone. And he's like, oh, I didn't see you there. And then he shoots up the booth to like make it so like, he kind of does those things where like if people are just rude for no reason, you're just like I wish that I could do something like that.
Yeah, like someone's rude and you think like, oh yeah, I just want to go to town on this guy.
Yeah,
but, like,
exactly.
You inhibit yourself from doing it. But yeah, it's like it's like, and that might be. Yeah, I mean, that is the reason why at least some people like this movie, right? They, like, identify with these, like,
the little
feelings
that,
of rage and stuff.
Yeah.
But for some reason, you're right. It didn't tap into consciousness enough that it's still talked about today.
I think it's for the reason that you and I kind of aren't connecting on here. I think that a lot of people just see the ugly parts of the reality and they think, oh, it's racist. Oh,
okay.
It's,
Maybe.
Yeah, but that's just it. You were getting to the boot scene. And,
okay.
The
boot scene.
Yeah. So he goes into like an army surplus store, and the owner is straight up Nazi. Listening to the police scanner, he knows what. What
knows they're searching for?
Defense has been up to.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So he sees him coming in the store. He knows exactly who he is, and he thinks he knows who. Why he's doing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
he identifies with him. He likes him, right?
Yeah.
The Nazi guy.
He totally bashes some guys that he thinks are gay in his store.
Right. Yeah. He yells at them,
pushes them out.
Yeah. And then they leave, and then he takes him to his back room, all his weird Nazi right.
Yeah, before or after saving him from the police, because the police come in.
Oh,
like,
right.
Hey,
that's right.
Have you seen this guy? And he totally.
That's right. It's amazing the police got that store right. But she was just covering the tracks. Like,
right.
Yeah. But yeah, so the Nazi guy.
Telephone booth right outside.
Yeah. The Nazi guy takes him in the back.
And shows him his Nazi memorabilia.
Yeah, he shows him that he's got the same gas the Nazis use in the gas chambers.
Yeah, the Cyclone B, an empty one. Yeah.
Okay. But then they also get in a fight. Foster just gets in a fight with everybody.
Well, but that's just it. He's standing up for what he thinks his principles are.
Right. And he rubs people the wrong way, and he rubs the Nazi the wrong way because he refuses to identify with
them. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you're a sick asshole. I'm an American.
Yeah.
Which I think is I think that's the perfect scene to cleanse you of like what you may think that his character is becoming at that point. Because this is the pivotal scene where he's out of his business attire. Right,
he changes into a jumpsuit.
Yeah, he's in like a army fatigues.
Right.
And he's like full on. And it, one of the things that the Nazi guy shows him is a bazooka. He's like, look what I got for you.
Yeah.
And yeah, he ends up killing him.
Yeah.
And this is the only, or this is the first time he kills somebody. The first time he's killed somebody is the Nazi.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Which I think means something. And that's also where he kind of becomes irredeemable in a sense too.
When he kills someone else?
Yeah, he's killed somebody.
Okay. Yeah.
He's not just like a folk hero.
Right. And he's, as you said, like when he crosses this threshold, he changes garb. So it could also be like the video game thing.
That's what I'm saying.
Once you become to this, you change identities, you cross a threshold, you change, you get new, I don't know, gear or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
He's gotten, now to the bazooka.
Yeah. You know, right. And also now he's maybe, you know, unequivocally the anti-hero or the bad person in the film, right? Like when
he killed a Nazi, so
I
think it still keeps it in that realm of like,
but yeah, but that's true, but yeah, I don't think
but this is
the gray zone.
He's like changed. And then we see Pendergrast in his exit interview with his captain.
Oh, yeah. Okay, because it's the last day on the job.
It's obvious that the captain doesn't really know him. He says something about, like, how's your kids? Oh, and this is where we learn that his child, his little girl, kind of like Bill, has died. He's lost his little girl, just like Bill, kind of in a different way. But the captain shows that he doesn't really know and or care for Pendergrast.
Right. Who is he even says that he doesn't like him, or is it?
Yeah, he thinks he's a coward, essentially, because he's Pendergrast a desk guy.
He took the desk job,
we learn later that it's because his wife made him. She didn't want
She was afraid of him. Getting hurt. Okay. So we have more disrespect for Pendergrast. It's an interesting name, Pendergrast. And
we get to know his wife a little bit more too.
Right.
She seems a very special type. She's very.
She's upset. She's needy. She's always, I guess. Yeah.
She's kind of controlling.
Yeah, I guess she is controlling.
And he lets her, you know, do most of what she wants, it seems.
Right. Oh, yeah. And then it becomes apparent, or at least it hints that he's retiring for her, right? Like they're moving out to another place.
They're going to Lake Havasu, which is where London Bridge has had been. And that's where we get the name of the film, The Falling Down.
Right.
London Bridge is falling down. And so.
Falling down.
Yeah. And.
I mean, I don't know. Foster's falling down too, you know. It's just
both of them. Yeah.
That is some good character development for Pendergrast. Find out a little bit more about him.
And the fact that it's his last day and he's not just like checked out already.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's like really actively involved in this thing. So it kind of hints that he like doesn't actually want to retire and he wants to stick with it. And then is this where Foster goes to the golf course?
Yeah.
So and then he's wandering, he's still wandering. Or
you know
LA.
What? He first he encounters a guy. There's another traffic jam and he's walking through it and somebody's yelling at somebody in front of him. Yeah. Like they can move. And he punches the guy, you know, for he's yelling. And then he gets up to the front of the line and there's some construction going on. And
he uses the bazooka.
Yeah. And he basically, makes the guy admit, which I don't know if it's true or not, but he's like, hey, this construction doesn't need to be happening. Yeah, you guys are just doing it to keep your budgets inflated.
Right, yeah.
And so, he's doing his righteous thing.
Right, and the guy kind of seems scared. He's just like, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, eventually.
Well, once he sees a bazooka at him.
He's like, oh, you're right. There's nothing
wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I told you there was nothing wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
He's creating his own reality, I guess.
Yeah, he kind of, at this point, he's completely broken.
Based on frustrations that we're all familiar with, though.
Right.
Like, construction taking years.
And you're like, and he's like, hey, I was here 2 days ago. Yeah. The road seemed fine. Why are you guys tearing it up now?
Yeah.
But yeah, he uses the bazooka in a funny way with a little kid that he doesn't really know how to use it. And the kid's like, hey, you guys filming a movie? Yeah, let me show you how to use that bazooka.
Yeah, yeah. And he knows how to do
yeah,
it. They have, a little, they have a little connection.
They have rapport, yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny.
but yeah, it's a heat-seeking bazooka, apparently, and he shoots it down like a tunnel. And
yeah.
Blows up everything in a perfectly Hollywood way.
Does he kill people?
You don't know, but there's a huge explosion and a whole bunch of people running away.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you shoot a bazooka at something, then you're
taking a risk.
Yeah.
In the middle of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
And then at this point, Pendergrass and his partner are much more hot on the scene because he realizes that he realizes where he's going. He knows that it's the same guy from the convenience store, and he's found the car that he moved in the beginning with
right.
the license plate defense.
Right. Yeah.
So
he put it together.
To the mother's house.
Yeah.
And Rachel Takotin's character tries to do the cop thing in a much more like straightforward way, and she doesn't like that. The mother doesn't really respond to that, and he starts commenting on her little figurines,
right,
which opens her up, and then they get a lot of information about
right.
that he where he works and
and that he was
that's
fired
where they
a month
learned
ago.
That he's been going to
yeah.
to work, and that also
well,
his mother
going, yeah.
is kind of scared of him, and he's
yeah.
kind of a cold and yeah, she feels like he sometimes wants to kill her, is what she
yeah.
says.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're learning more that
yeah.
he's kind of a cold guy.
That's interesting, though, because, like, I mean, if he is kind of this cold guy and that he's had these pasts with his mother and his wife and daughter, like, maybe he hasn't done everything right, like the American dream, you know what
or
I mean? So he thinks he might
thinks
have
he has,
done, yeah,
but,
right,
but
yeah.
that doesn't necessarily
right, right.
mean he
so,
has done everything right.
Right, okay.
Because also, yeah... we haven't really got to that. His wife has called the police 2 or 3 times and they send
right.
people out.
Right.
And she's like, hey, I think he's coming. Another thing that I found interesting is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the cops come and they basically get to the bottom of like, okay, so did he hit you? Did he hurt the kids? And he didn't. She just always felt like he might.
And, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which
right.
And she also says to him on the phone that you can't come within X amount of feet of the house. So there's some
right.
sort of like restraint.
Anywhere. Yeah. Yeah. So.
But also if he hasn't hurt her or the kids or the kid, that's another, you know, just like if you thought you were playing by the rules and you're not allowed to go to your.
Yeah, but I mean, if it seems like a threat, if you know.
But if you seem like a threat, I don't know. That doesn't seem like.
Yeah, because then, you know, people can construct realities. And
yeah.
Like,
you
could
be like, hey, I don't like this person anymore. I want them. They can't come around me.
Yeah. 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 Okay. But we do see, people in his, people close to him in his life are afraid of him. And
right.
it's not like necessarily the, you know, potentially stand-up American that
yeah.
he kind of leads on, or
right.
that he thinks he is. Okay. So, and then he wanders through
the
golf
course.
Cars,
yeah,
the golf
and
course.
Closer to Venice, which
yeah.
he now realizes where his wife lives. And, he's just walking through, and the two old golfers that he says pass it
two old white dudes
through.
With their little, like, golfing.
Yeah.
yeah. These guys are funny.
And, they're kind of rude to him, and hit a ball at him and that sets him off. He takes out a shotgun and shoots their cart, which is on a hill.
Yeah.
And
you,
the cart.
You ever want to do that, Doug, when you're golfing?
No, I haven't met that rude of people, but there's definitely times where I want people to go quicker.
Yeah.
But no, like, yeah, he shoots the golf cart and it rolls down the hill and into the water, and the shock of it makes one of the golfers have a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, my pills are in the cart. And you're happy now, you're going to die in that stupid little hat. Yeah, it should have been nice.
And
then he climbs over the next wall.
He sort of gets into a conflict with people and, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess he definitely has a lot of the advantage now with all those guns, but he gets into all these conflicts and he always just ends up winning and coming through, you know, that for whatever reason. And it doesn't really, it doesn't seem super realistic that he like comes through all these unscathed, it's not a critique of the film. But it's interesting. It could be saying something that like, for whatever reason, he ends up being successful, but I don't know. It just struck me.
It also struck me as he started out in kind of, white collar clothes in poorer neighborhoods, and then he ends up in kind of like more poorer people clothes in mm-hmm. white collar neighborhood,
right?
Kind of, and still tearing everything up.
Yeah,
he's destructive wherever he goes.
Right,
but okay. it's kind of like a conflict of the classes.
There's
more
inverted.
It's more like class stuff and
This movie definitely, you know,
it brings up
racial tensions and class tensions that were apparent in the 90s and are still apparent today.
It doesn't do it in a way that liberal media finds correct, I think, is kind of where we have been coming to.
Liberal media finds correct.
Yeah, in general, mainstream outlets don't like things that aren't painted in a certain way. And this is definitely in a way that it's not, you don't know who he is or what.
Well, I mean,
it doesn't say what it's about or like.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know why you're thinking about liberal media, but like, you know, you don't like,
I guess, any media, like, really.
So the idea is like gray. Like that, yeah, like it's either good or bad. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Certainly in the 90s, a lot of like the grayness was odd. Like nowadays you see more like anti-heroes that are.
That's all it is. Yeah. Is anti-heroes.
Well, not all, but like there's more anti-heroes and there's more like gray characters, I think. Like,
but they're still of the build that I think is like societally acceptable of what it's trying to say, whereas this, it's kind of not saying what you should believe, you know, whereas in like Dexter, where it's a murderer who murders murderers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because he's a bad guy, but he's right, doing,
or Breaking Bad, or
right,
a lot of films and movies now are kind of, they're just like the bad guys are the bad guys really bad.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's kind of saying like maybe the bad guys are good guys.
Right. Yeah. Or at least there's a more nuance and more of a question about it. Yeah.
And that's more of like you don't even know if he's a hero in certain aspects or a villain.
Right.
It seems to me he's definitely like a victim of certain things that may or may not be his fault. But he is not a good guy.
Right.
He's the victim, but he's not in the right.
Well, he's a victim. Yeah, he's a victim in some ways, but also he does seem to have created, you know, some of this negative reality, right? Like he's pushed his mother away. He's pushed his wife and daughter away, like in the past. You know, he did get fired from his job. I don't necessarily know if it's just because of the ending of the Cold War. Maybe he did a poor job. I don't know. But
they did lay off a lot of people.
Yeah. Especially like defense people. Yeah. Okay, so then should we talk about the climactic scene on the pier?
Sure.
There's the final scene on the pier where, you know, Foster faces Pendergast, you know, his family, you know, he finally does track, Foster tracks down his family and he gets him on the pier. And you could tell, like, his family is pretty afraid of him.
Yeah.
They're like, sort of have, you know, Foster and Pendergast have a little talk, and
And he gets the gun away from Foster, and then they have a really good talk.
Now let's go meet some nice policemen. They're good guys. Come on, let's go.
I'm the bad guy?
Yeah.
How'd that happen? I did everything they told me to. Did you know I build missiles?
Yeah.
I help to protect America? You should be rewarded for that. Instead, they give it to the plastic surgeon. You know, they lied to me.
Is that what this is about? You're angry because you got lied to? Is that why my chicken dinner's drying out in the oven? Hey, they lie to everybody. They lie to the fish. But that doesn't give you any special right to do what you did today. The only thing that makes you special is that little girl. Now let's go. Let's go!
The perfect line is, I'm the bad guy? Because the whole time he's thought he's the good guy.
Yeah, but he says that a few times in the film. He's like, you think I'm the bad guy here? Like,
right, but this is where he's questioning it himself.
Okay, like, maybe he really realizes it. Yeah.
And then, because maybe he was the whole time planning on killing his family or like...
He wants
vengeance. He feels like he's been wronged and
he's angry.
He's exerting his vengeance.
Yeah.
You know, revenge.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And he kind of it is kind of a heroic act how he basically commits suicide knowing that his family will get the insurance money. Or at least that's what he says.
Yeah. He draws his squirt gun. Yeah. And the cops shoots him.
Yeah. And that's kind of funny though. Like, I would have got you or whatever. And he like falls off the pier.
Yeah.
But yeah. And it kind of ends on a good note too with the home videos. And you can kind of see in some of the home videos that he was kind of like a overbearing guy.
Right. So the film did want to make that clear that there's some aspect of
Also like he was like, get on the horsey.
Yeah. And then just get frustrated.
He wants everything to be right. And he's like, why is not everybody doing the thing that I feel is right.
Right. Yeah.
And I thought it was funny. The whole video with him telling his daughter to get on the horsey the whole time he's bringing the gift to the daughter who didn't want to get on the horsey was a horse in a snow globe. So he like maybe the little girl doesn't even like horses.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter to him. He's got a picture, horses.
But he's got a picture of what they.
Yeah, he wants to build his own reality
that she likes. Yeah, right. Instead of like responding to the actual reality.
Right.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, and that seems to be an important part of his character. And potentially, I don't know, maybe the 50s mindset. I'm not sure about that, but like, creating a reality that you think is right and not necessarily like listening to what is actually going on with people or like what people's actual needs are or something like that.
Also, I like that Pendergast kind of tells off his boss at the end. He says, go fuck yourself. Cause the boss says that he never swears and he doesn't like that in a cop.
Right.
Like he kind of overcomes some of his obstacles too.
Yeah, but I don't know. I didn't really buy the character change from Pendergast. He kind of like...
I don't think it was... It wasn't a character change as much as it was like he was just able to like be
assert himself. I didn't see the character arc there. Like I didn't see... Because usually when you see like a character, you know, who's like, you know, putting up with shit and disrespected and then like by the end...
he punches his friend in the office who's like...
Yeah, no, I know, but that's when he changes. I just didn't see his character development. I saw him, one, and then just all of a sudden he's kind of like, not even just asserting himself, he's kind of a dick at the end, honestly. I think he's
like
too
far.
I thought it was kind of funny.
Like, I thought he was kind of, you know, just being like a little bit like...
Yeah.
Like fuck the system in a small way that compares.
I just didn't buy his character change as much. But I understand what they're trying to do.
I thought it kind of fit in there.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, does that about round it out?
What do you think? I think so, yeah. I think it's a really good movie. It says a lot about society, not just back then, but now. And
yeah,
it makes you think. And I think that that's what is really important
about
this movie.
I like this movie. I like the themes. I don't think I like it as much as you like it, right. But I do like appreciate the scenes, and I think it, you know, fosters a good discussion.
Yeah.
And the character is super interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, fair enough. Okay, well, that rounds out episode 2 of The Reanimators.
Thanks, everybody.